Hey, before we get started with this week's episode, I just want to give you a quick announcement. This is Deidre, and I am here to tell you that we have something brand new and exciting. And in case you haven't heard, I'm going to let Megan share with you how you can join our Patreon community and why you should.
Yeah, we just started our Dauntless Grace community, and it's through Patreon. And by joining us, you are working with us to support our mission. You can access exclusive content like behind the scenes videos that, are just mine and Deidre's faces with some special guests, plus bonus content from a lot of our really, really special guests. You can join a vibrant community and enjoy special perks like retreat discount pricing. So head on over to dauntlessgrace.org/community to find out more.
And there's more than just that. So if you didn't hear, you should go check out that link that she is telling you about because we also have monthly coffee and chat calls where we talk Enneagram. And for the next level up, quarterly co group calls with therapists. So I'm telling you, this is a really cool community to be part of, and you don't want to miss this opportunity.
Dauntlessgrace.org/community.
Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Megan. And today our guest is Andy Kolber. And I am fangirling a lot. And I'm instead of like tripping all over my own words, I'm just going to read Andy's bio to you to start. Andy Kolber is a licensed professional counselor and the best-selling author of the critically acclaimed Try Softer and her newest book, Strong Like Water. She has received additional training in her specialization of trauma and body-centered therapies and is passionate about the integration of faith and psychology. Andy has appeared on Good Morning America. Oh my goodness. Regularly speaks at national events and is a frequent guest on podcasts such as The Lazy Genius, Typology, and The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill. As a survivor of trauma, Andy brings hard-won knowledge about the work of change, the power of redemption, and the beauty of experiencing God with us in our pain. Welcome, Andy.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here with you both.
We're so honored. And just reading your bio kind of makes me feel like, why in the heck are you doing our podcast?
Well, I just appreciated that you reached out and am loving what you're doing. And it's great to be able to have, sort of generative conversations.
I love it. What do you want to tell us about yourself that's not in that incredibly crafted biography?
Oh, that's a good question. This is a super random fact, but my husband and I were laughing about this the other day. So I love seafood. I'm from the Pacific Northwest originally. I now live in Michigan, but and there's some great seafood here too. But I have this thing where I love scallops. Like I love scallops. And we were joking about like I'm the person who if scallops are on the menu, there's like a 90% chance that I will probably find a way to order it. So that's something really random that I don't think should be in my bio, but maybe people will know me a little better.
I like that.
I think that's great. And I would like to know where in Michigan you're getting good seafood because we're also from the Midwest and I haven't found any.
So we live in Grand Rapids and there are some great restaurants. And I mean, I'm not saying all seafood here is like when you grow up, like where I grew up was Astoria, Oregon, literally right next to the Pacific Ocean and the Columbia River. And so I grew up eating like a ton of salmon and, there were even, I think there were fish that I wish now that I would have eaten that I didn't like when I was younger. And now my, taste changed. And, so there are some spots, there are more than you would think. And I feel like, especially with maybe like logistically seafood moves faster than maybe it used to. And so that, and there's some good seafood in Lake Michigan, though not scallops.
Well, one other thing that we are curious about, and I think you've communicated, but your Enneagram type, because we talk a lot about Enneagram on this pod. So are you a four? Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, I am. So I am an Enneagram four, with a three wing. And I believe my subtype, is self-preservation. So sort of a, sort of the opposite type of, I forget what the word for that is, but essentially a counter
Okay.
type is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
And that has been an interesting journey because I knew for a while that I was a four before I came to understand. And I don't know how much y'all talk about subtypes because I know that, yeah, there's different layers to that. But for me, that was really helpful to understand because I knew I was a four for a long time, and but I felt confused because I didn't always present like other fours.
Sure.
And what was helpful for me to understand about the counter type four was how often it's like experienced as in like internally, those that deep feeling, all of those experiences that are thought of as a four. But outwardly, oftentimes there's this sense of like have it all together, like very, oftentimes one of the words that's used to describe this type of four is like tenacious. And when I think about the first 20 years of my life in particularly, and really for me, we may get into this, but as a trauma survivor, what I think about is how I really survived my childhood into early adulthood was by developing very strong armor that made it so that I was experiencing things like I had a lot of deep pain, but a lot of people didn't know that. I was very skilled at looking like I was not only fine, but like would now be a leader. In the midst of that, like, and I, so I think that was confusing, right? Like, it's like unpacking that. And so it's really been, so I'm now 41, and really, I think about like, especially like the last 20 years for me has been such a journey of softening that armor. And so my first book is Try Softer, and I found out about the counter type after I wrote Try Softer.
Oh, wow.
And when I really connected with that, I was like, well, of course, I wrote a book called Try Softer, right? Because that for me, I mean, I think it hopefully applies to people in lots of different ways. But for me in my life, one of my primary strategies was truly like white knuckling, being the strong one, figuring it out, doing it alone, just. Lots of, and not to say that there weren't other strategies. There were, and there are still things that I have to, really listen to and attune. But I think a lot of times the way socially people experienced me, that was one of the main strategies.
I really appreciate how you said that because I am also a four, probably grew up with a three wing, also 41, so same generation. And I am not self-preservation at all. That's probably my repressed subtype. I'm more social, maybe sexual, depending on the season. And so in my mind, I'm like, oh, the countertype to a four. So you have all the same big feelings, but you don't present that way. Sounds kind of like the perfect situation to me and the more grown-up way to be a four. And so I think part of me was like, why can't I not look like a four all the time to everybody that I'm with? So I like how you just said that because the way that you white knuckled it is not any better or worse than any of the protectors that I have to deal with and live with and heal with and figure out. It's just a different way of protecting. It's that armor. So your journey has been to try softer. Mine probably is to try harder sometimes, depending on the situation. Not that I can't try softer as well, or the strong like water is really what resonated with me the most because I don't feel like I have a lot of iron strength. I feel like that fluid strength is a lot more resonant. Anyway, just appreciate how you said that.
Yeah, no, I thank you for saying that. And yeah, it's like I think what's interesting is that I also have even still, right? Like the big feelings are still there for me, right? And so in the absence of the attunement that we need, right? Which is so much of my work is relationally based, it's attachment based. I love bringing in lots of different integrative pieces. Sometimes that's faith, but that's also different psychoeducational theories. And because I think it helps us get this really full picture of our humanity. And so, in the absence of that loving, attuned, present sort of what we need sometimes. And I don't know your story, so I don't want to speak into that. But I know for mine, that was still there. So what's been interesting is that even as that armor had to get softer, there's still the emotional regulation piece of, okay, now there's another layer. Okay, here's the big emotions. What do we now do with those? How do you ride the waves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you be with, right? And I think what's so interesting, I mean, I love the Enneagram. I think there's so much value. And there's also the reality that we are all human. And there's this way in which all Enneagram work is ultimately about wholeness, right?
Yeah.
It's ultimately about bringing that curiosity to more fully embody the fullness of our humanity. That's all. It's going to look a little different for each of us, but there is the commonality there too.
You're using the word attunement a lot. And so I just want you to define that for some of our listeners who maybe don't do as much in the therapeutic world. I mean, obviously we know what it means to attune to something, but like specifically in this context, could you give us a little more information on that?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I'll just unpack it a little bit. I think from a lens of like sort of human development, each of us are born with the need to attach and to be cared for. Like we cannot, like we literally cannot survive without care. And then what happens is that we might have a whole spectrum of experiences based off of our caregivers, how they are able to be with us. And so meaning like how they respond to our needs, how they respond to our cries, how they are able to, an example, like from a lot of like psychological research, there's something called like the still face experiment, where babies, I believe it was with like depressed mothers, that it became deeply disturbing to the babies when the mother wasn't mirroring back the expression that the baby had. So a way to think about attunement is it's a developmental need that is based in the sort of like it's sort of like being on the same page with someone, and it's like a dance. And so when we experience that in our childhood, it helps us sort of view the world through a lens where we feel safe. It helps us make sense of the world. And then we like internalize those experiences. And ultimately, as we grow, we have the ability to then almost like have our own inner parent, who is able to sort of be like, oh, I'm hungry. Oh, I'm noticing I'm hungry. It like, I'll get some food. Like I'll feed myself. Or I'm sad. Oh, it's okay to feel my feelings when I'm sad. Because we have these templates that came from our whole life that helps us do that. And when that experience is impaired for lots of different reasons, and you know, that's what attachment theory attempts to discuss, right? And I won't go into all of that here, but basically when we get good enough attunement, we internalize that, and it allows us to show up in the world sort of with a fairly accurate view of ourselves and others. And it helps our nervous system to be like the most resilient and attuned. And when that doesn't happen, it impedes our ability to care for ourselves in the ways that we need. And that's sometimes where the strategies come up. That's where we armor up, or we maybe over-identify with our emotions, or we lose ourselves in someone else, or we feel really disconnected from our bodies. Like there's all these different ways our bodies adapt. And so attunement is this very basic way of learning to listen and respond to the needs of our body.
That's so good. And I love that word you just used, strategies, because I think that's where the Enneagram is like a good map to start getting some language around what are the strategies I may have employed to get what I was missing or needing that I didn't, you know, I couldn't quite figure out. So we kind of like that as language to like overlay to help people, because so I'm just going to have a little rant here. One of the things when we first started this ministry, we would do conferences and we kind of use the idea of story, like in the big arc of our lives, these things we go through
and how we use strategies. And then what does that look like to eventually get to the point where we're like, these are maladaptive and maybe I need the Lord to like, give me a new strategy here. Like maybe this isn't working now like it was, right? And the what doesn't kill you make you stronger adage would come at us so often, like, well, I've lived through so much and I'm better for it. And then as Christians, they would say, and my testimony is that I survived that. And like, to some extent, yes, to God be the glory that he gave you the skills and coping coping skills necessary to survive. But it was hard to kind of break in. And again, we're from a very Christian world, so it may have been a lot of spiritualizing parts that were part of those protectors. But to break in and say, okay, you survived, but I love in your book, Strong Like Water, how you talk about that is just one, that's a situational strength. And yes, it's important and we need it. There's no shame in that, right? But what is it like to receive the invitation to come over? And so I wonder if you, as we're talking about attunement, if you could give us some of the nuts and bolts of your three kinds of strengths that you talk about.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. And I totally will, but I just want to respond a little bit to that because absolutely. I mean, this is part of why I wrote Strong Like Water. I mean, one of the many reasons. There are many, many reasons. But I think that we have a culture and I think oftentimes like maybe Western culture, Western Christianity, there is a valuing of completion. Like, are you finished? Like, and there's also this, so like there's lack of space for nuance, lack of space for process, lack of space, what I see as humanity, right? But then we have Jesus who was fully God and fully human, right? And that there is this truth in which within our bodies is the wisdom of God. That there is a way in which our bodies are like a revelation in its own sense of a way that God created us, like that we hold the image of God. And so unpacking all of these layers of the ways that we have, again, it's sort of strategies. I think you're right, right? That like, it's too painful. Sometimes we don't feel like we can touch on the truth of like, would we be able to survive it if we named like, oh, this suffering was just so much. And what do we do with that? And there's no bow to tie on. Like, what then? Right. And so this invitation to recognize we can still, like one of the things I say a lot is like, for me personally, and I want to honor that different people in their own story get to name this. But as a trauma survivor, something that I say is that for me, trauma gets zero credit for me, for who I am. Mm-hmm. Trauma doesn't get the credit, right? Like for me, it's like that the goodness of God is that my body was able to adapt to circumstances that were deeply toxic and traumatic and chaotic. That's the goodness of God. And then God's relentless moving toward, right? That God goes after the one sheep, right? Like that's the heart of God. And so to me, it's not to say that God can't use, right? That those difficult things, but that to give the pain, the credit to me is a profound misunderstanding of the mercy and the goodness of the way that God can work it to good, but not because the good, that trauma deserves the credit, right? Yeah. And so for me in Strong Like Water, what I attempted to do was to say, look, trauma, pain, crisis, stress, those are real parts of our world. We live in an imperfect world. Sin is real and present. There are all these things. This is real. And so there are ways that our bodies are designed to respond when we perceive, and this, you know, there's a lot of neurobiological sort of research that helps us understand that when our body detects a certain level of threat, sure. And it's going to be a little different for each person based off of our story, all these different things. But when that happens, we will go outside of what is known as our window of tolerance. So what that means is that we will Our prefrontal cortex goes offline. We usually will go into like our sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight, or we might, you know, go to dorsal vagal where we will dissociate. And in my book, what I talk about that is anytime we leave that window of tolerance, anytime that the level of threat feels significant enough, and that could be real or perceived, we will likely access something that I call situational strength. And situational strength is one of those things that, again, I believe is actually God-given because it allows us to adapt. And with that said, this is a place where at times we may also do things that are out of alignment with our character. We might act in ways because we're trying to stay safe that aren't always good or okay. And that is real too. You know, it doesn't excuse those things, but at least helps us understand it. So situational strength is really like this life or death energy. Mm-hmm. Like we literally, this energy is very much coming from a place of instantaneous and unconscious. And so for folks who have a history of trauma, that can get very ingrained, and it can often, it can sort of be something that becomes this pattern that we live from, that we sometimes even might come to believe is our actual identity. Which I think is part of what, you know, what the Enneagram helps to us unpack a little bit, you know. But here's what's, I think, so encouraging to me. And this is what I think trauma work and research has helped us to understand, is that as our body begins to have enough cues of safety, and in the book, I kind of allude to this as what I call compassionate resourcing.
Yeah.
When we begin to get safety, our body, our nervous system sort of begins to return to some homeostasis, or at least that prefrontal cortex begins to come back online, and we begin to feel like we have some choices. And this is a really beautiful, important place, because what happens is rather than being like, oh, that person was really rude to me, and like all that I know is that like I'm bad, right? Like if I'm in situational strength, I might be thinking I'm just bad. But if I can access some of that safety, I might be able to begin to say, wow, I am aware that what that person just said to me hurt really bad. Like that feels a little bit like a gut punch. Like I'm aware of that. I'm noticing that. And from that place, I might even be able to be like, wow, what do I need? Like maybe I need to leave. Maybe I need to set a boundary with that person. Maybe I need to go on a really brisk walk. Maybe I need to do some grounding so I can use my five senses to get oriented to this space so I can really feel like that's not okay behavior. And like I have some choices here, right? So this next place is called transitional strength. That's what I call that middle place where we essentially, it's a lot of both and. Mm-hmm. We might have experiences that don't feel resolved, but we still feel connected to ourselves. You know, like in Enneagram language, sometimes I feel like that's maybe what we think of as like the true self. We have access to that. And I think from a faith perspective, once we start to get into this transitional space, we start to feel like we have more access to hearing God, to noticing God is with us, to noticing that, you know, that there are resources available to us. Often when we're in that situational strength, we are so much in our survival brain that it's really almost like this.
Yeah.
Listeners probably can't hear me, but I'm basically putting hands close to my eyes and it makes us have tunnel vision.
Yeah.
To deal with the potential threat. And then with the transitional strength, as we feel like we have the safety, the resources, the support, our body taps into our natural ability to metabolize a difficult experience. And essentially, it's almost like, I think of it almost like sloughing off. Like we slough off what we no longer need in terms of like, that was a weird experience. I'm not a huge fan of that. Like we're able to move it through our bodies and then we're able to sort of process it or even sort of almost file it away accurately in our brain so that it's not a disturbing experience.
Yeah.
And from that, we can learn from it, or we can be like, wow, I'm really proud of myself for, you know, not acting in a way that was out of alignment. And I set a really good, healthy boundary. And I know in the future, if that happens, like I can do it again, right? So that's what I call integrative strength, that there's this sense of completion to this thing that happened. So I know I gave you like a really long answer to that, but great question.
That's amazing. Can we get to integrated strength though without purposing to?
I think
that's something.
Yeah. So what I would say is that it's both and. I think there's intentionality there, but it's not a forced. It's not the, you know, I think of like, I think it's Eugene Peterson's translation, when he talks about Jesus's words, like the unforced rhythms of grace, that there's a way in which when we are listening and attuning, again, there's that word to our body, or even, and as we feel like we have the support we need, I think there is intention to say like, oh, this thing has been hard. Like, I want to care for it.
Yeah.
And I almost think about like, here's this pain. How do I really honor and give the honor and the safety to this pain so that it doesn't have to stay so stuck? And so I think there's intentionality that comes with that. Like sometimes it might require going, for example, to therapy, like that in it, like some things may need professional support. Like I think about things like EMDR, which is a trauma processing protocol, because something is sometimes so stuck in our body that we need that additional support. And there's no shame in that. And that's very intentional, but it's done in a way, and this is what's different, I think, than anything else in terms of what we've named, is that it's done with enough safety that our body can both risk. So there's some risk involved to facing things that have been hard. Like, and I think that's something that is a real part of this work, but we're risking with enough safety. And that in many ways is that's sort of like the recipe for resilience, that there is enough safety, there is enough repair, there's enough even recovery after you have maybe experienced or felt something. All of that allows this thing that our body ultimately, like another thing that I think is really beautiful here is that I think God, there's so much that we see in our body that we are literally designed to do this work. This is not me saying like, hey, if you do these things, somehow your body will have like this new way of doing this. Instead, it's that your body is capable of this work. This is how we are designed as people. It's just, in many ways, it's almost like digesting food. Like we're also designed to digest emotions and experiences and sensations. But what is often missing is the safety and support. And that's the key that sort of unlocks a lot of it.
So good.
You talked about compassionate resourcing and you gave some examples. And I'm just wondering if you could give us some more examples of what that might look like to do for ourselves, to find some of that safety and support even within ourselves.
Yeah. So I love the work of Dr. Arielle Schwartz. She is a sort of integrative somatic therapist. And when she talks about resourcing, and I think this is important to define because sometimes people hear resources and there's like so many different things you could think of. So she defines a resource as anything that communicates safety to our bodies in the present. So that's that connection, right, between the safety. And so what is important to understand is that depending on where we are on that flow of strength, so that's what I just described as that whole flow of strength. Depending on where we are, we may need different resources. So the resources that you might utilize when you are going from transitional strength to integrative strength would likely feel too overwhelming to someone's body if they are in situational strength. So that's something that's really important to understand and why, and probably both of you have noticed in my writing, but I give lots of caveats, right? Like I'm always telling people like, hey, if there's this, you may do this, you know, like, and I do that.
You want to be understood, some Enneagram 4 problems there a
little bit. It is, but I think that it's actually really important because particularly for trauma survivors, oftentimes really prescriptive advice First of all, doesn't work. It just doesn't. Because what has always been missing is the attunement. What has always been missing is that relational, it's the withness, it's our own compassionate internal witness. And so when someone is in a place that if they're trying to apply advice to something that doesn't match the situation, in many ways, that actually just mimics the misattunement. And then what ends up happening is we internalize this belief like, well, look, see, I'm broken. See how bad I am. See, I'm the only one perhaps that can't heal. And so one of my deep hopes for my work is that people experience that sense of spaciousness. And so when we talk about that compassionate resourcing, I think that's an important disclaimer, because when we are in sort of more that situational strength, we might need really basic types of resources. And that is totally okay. Like if you are realizing like, I'm about to just like lose it on my family. If you try to go into some sort of like, logical, whatever to help calm yourself down, everybody knows like that is not going to work. You know what I mean? And so the resources often have to mimic the state, the nervous system state. And so oftentimes like we want to start with things that help just orient us to safety. So a really well-known one that, you know, I talk about often is like grounding. And that's using our five senses. And part of that with grounding is that not that it's like a magic wand, you know, but it's that what we're literally doing is we're activating the orienting response in our body. Because when we begin to leave that window of tolerance, and we're in our right brain, right side of our brain, we can't always tell the difference between past and present. And so by helping us sort of return to the present, it gives us more access to be like, oh, wow. Like my response is really big for the situation, you know? And then we might layer the resources on top of it. So then it's like, okay, so what else might I need? So sometimes it might be co-regulation. It's like being with someone who feels really safe or really grounded, or you feel like you can trust. If you feel like you're resourced enough, you might be able to do practices like containment, which is where we utilize our imagination to sort of create some healthy psychological distance. So those are sort of ones that I would call like they're sort of basic. Sometimes we might be able to use our breath. So there are some different like breath prayers or things like that that can sometimes be helpful. But again, I know I sound like a broken record, but it's like being aware, is this helpful for me? Because it's not true for everybody, and that's okay. And then as we get into further, you know, we might be able to like in Strong Like Water and then in the guided journey, I really explore and invite people to expand on things like experiences where you've like, for example, felt empowered or experiences where you have felt like people really see you. And what we can do is we can actually utilize our imagination to anchor those to our nervous system in an embodied way. And that then helps essentially expand our ability to feel safer more quickly and easier. And so it's sort of like, it's sort of an upward spiral with all of those.
Okay. So first of all, if people have not read Strong Like Water, it's already there out for you to grab, but your guided journey that comes out when? At the end of this month, I believe?
March 26th.
Yes. March 26th. Okay. Yes. So such a great resource to have that companion with the book. There's been like just a whole lot of information that you've shared that is we need to digest. No, I'm saying like, it's so good, but I have read the book. So I'm wondering for people who haven't, like some of this may not all completely makes sense if you're not used to this language, but get the book. It's very, I don't want to say easy to read, like it's not deep, but I mean, you lay it out in layman's terms. So you don't
I
have to be a
try.
therapist to understand this. So I just want people to know that. And like, it will really be a resource that will change your life. So I just want to encourage people to do that. How can they connect with you more, Andi?
Yeah, well, you can find me on Instagram at Andi Kolber, on my website. So there will be videos that go along with the guided journey. And especially, you know, whether you've already read or sorry, that go with the guided journey. And then whether you've read Strong Like Water or not, some folks find it helpful to do the guided journey at the same time as reading it. So that is an option too, partly because the hope, my deep hope is that people will honor the pace of their body. So sometimes folks get into it and it takes a little bit of time to just sort of metabolize and process. It's kind of like what you're saying. And I find that sometimes having another place to process how they are experiencing it can be really helpful. And so, yeah, so AndiKolber.com is my website. And then you can find the books anywhere books are sold.
I am a really fast reader, so I think I read Strong Like Water in like maybe 2 or 3 evenings just because I wanted to get to the information so quickly. And I also understand that that's probably not the best way to really get that book into your body. So I'm super excited to get the guided journey and intentionally take my time to go back through it and like embody what you're speaking of and not just absorb it as head knowledge.
No, I so appreciate that. And I think people just are so interesting how there's just, we have these different styles. And like part of me, like as an author, I love to hear that, you know? And I think I've always just been so amazed to hear, you know, whether it's TriSoft or Strong Like Water, like the different ways that work for folks. Like I have some folks who will like listen to the audiobook, but then they'll also get the book. So that like that's helpful for them. And I just love how innovative people are, you know, and that they figure out like, okay, here's what works for me. And I honestly just bless that. I love that.
Well, Andi, thank you so much for sharing this, just your wealth of wisdom with our audience. And I would like to say for any of you who are waiting for March 27th for the Guided Journey videos, that you can actually get a sneak peek of bonus video with us and Andi now if you jump over to our Patreon. But in the meantime, just thank you so much. We really appreciate what you're sharing with us, and from a faith perspective, to marry that with all of the knowledge and wisdom that you have is transformative. So we appreciate your time and all that you give.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.